Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with Tunisia, where there is an uneasy calm on the streets following the departure of the dictator Ben Ali. We'll be joined by Blake Hounshell, who is the managing editor of Foreign Policy and is an Arab-speaking expert who is in Doha, Qatar. Then we will discuss the looming prospect of skyrocketing housing foreclosures and the possibility of a rash of municipal defaults that could undermine the municipal bond market and cause the next financial crisis. Economist Michael Hudson joins us. Then, as we celebrate Martin Luther King holiday, we will talk with the distinguished African-American scholar Gerald Horn, who joins us to discuss the global uprising of frustrated, angry youth reminiscent of the civil rights struggle and the relationship between Martin Luther King and American foreign policy. And then finally, on the 50th anniversary of President Eisenhower's farewell address, we will talk with William Hartung, the author of a new book, Prophets of War, Lockheed Martin and the Making of the Military-Industrial Complex. So stay tuned. Let us now turn to the situation in Tunisia. I'm speaking with Blake Hounshell, who is managing editor at Foreign Policy magazine. He joined Foreign Policy in 2006 after living in Cairo, where he studied Arabic and worked at the Ibn Khaldun Center for Development Studies. He is talking to us from Doha, Qatar. And just on Thursday in Doha, Qatar, at the meeting of the Forum for the Future, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was talking about, and I suppose she was in a sense trying to get ahead of what was happening in Tunisia, but talked about the expectations of the young being frustrated by stagnant political order and how the money and prospects in these countries in the Middle East were being funneled to a tiny elite. What is your sense of what the Secretary of State was saying? Was she trying to preempt what was happening or about to happen in Tunisia?
Well, I think there's no question that Tunisia was on her mind. But she had just been in Yemen, which, if anything, is even worse off than Tunisia. So she might have had images from that trip on the brain as well. Either way, it was really a fortuitous thing to have said just the day before Tunisia ousted its president. It's the first time an Arab leader has been forced from office by people power in history.
And there in Qatar, with all of the leaders of the region, are some of them trembling in their boots?
No doubt. There were a lot of this is the foreign ministers, but either way, the leaders of countries like Egypt, Algeria, Libya had to be nervous as they're watching things unfold in Tunisia. Actually, there was a really interesting sort of bizarre speech by Muammar Gaddafi, the Libyan leader, last night, who said that Tunisians were impatient. They should have just waited 3 years for Ben Ali's term to expire, and they should have kept him because he was the best leader in Africa, as Gaddafi put it.
Gaddafi is throwing his credibility in quotes behind this disgraced leader who was roundly hated by his people. And according to these WikiLeaks documents, the U.S. government was saying the guy's totally out of touch with his people.
And, that was absolutely right. It seemed like, to the very end, he didn't really have a good, sense of what was going on in the Tunisian street. And he let his wife and his wife's family get away with a lot of just really gross excesses. And that really angered people who were dealing with high unemployment. One of the ironies of the Tunisian situation is Ben Ali actually did a pretty decent job of building an education system. But the problem is when you educate people but you're not able to find jobs for them, they find ways of expressing their grievances, and it ultimately led to his ouster. The sort of gap between their expectations and what he was able to provide for them economically.
Again, I'm speaking with the managing editor of Foreign Policy magazine, Blake Hounshell, who is in Qatar in the Middle East, and where Secretary of State Hillary Clinton last Thursday, to some extent preempted events in Tunisia by suggesting that the region's foundations are sinking into the sand. And it does seem, though, Blake Hounshell, that we perhaps, you know, are too Eurocentric or America-centric in terms of our analysis sometimes. For example, I understand the White House was quite shocked by the demonstrations in Pakistan in favor of the bodyguard who shot the progressive governor of the state of Punjab. And I understand that, you know, the main kind of narrative that we have about Tunisia is in many ways, you know, that it is has created a fairly big middle class, but it's also been popular with Western investors, but not with the people on the street. And this revolution was sparked by a young man who was college educated, who couldn't get a job except selling fruit on a street corner, and the much hated police hassled him, confiscated his fruit, and left him, you know, a penniless because he was supposed to have the license. But obviously there was, you know, probably angling for a bribe there. Who knows? But the long and the short is the kid immolated himself, and that became the spark for this revolution.
Well, you know, that's just exactly the kind of thing that world events turn on. It's not something that analysts are very good at predicting historically. But I do think people who are watching Tunisia, you know, closely were warning about this sort of thing, not only U.S. diplomats in the cables, but also outside analysts. I remember reading an op-ed in The Guardian in November warning that Tunisia was on the brink of something. I didn't really note it at the time, but in hindsight, it seemed like a warning sign worth paying attention to.
But it did seem, though, that there was a kind of a Wizard of Oz quality to this coup, that the leader had been in there for 23 years, and it seemed like he was sort of delusional. When he gave his last television address, he was sitting there trying to make excuses for himself, and the phone kept ringing, and there was nobody to answer the phone. He eventually had to answer the phone. It was just pathetic.
Yeah, well, you know, this is what happens to leaders. The older they get, the longer they stay in power. He'd been there for 23 years. And was heavily involved in the state before then. I remember reading something today that was quite fascinating about when people were tearing down posters of him in Tunis, they were peeling back layer after layer of posters of Ben Ali, and it actually seemed like he was getting older the further you peeled back the layers, because he was so vain. He had had all of his wrinkles airbrushed and his hair dyed as he got older.
I see. Well, what is your sense, Blake Hounshell, again, the managing editor of Foreign Policy magazine, who is in Doha, Qatar, in the Persian Gulf, where the foreign ministers of the Middle Eastern countries are meeting, and where Secretary of State Hillary Clinton gave an address last Thursday that apparently shook up a lot of the Arab leaders there in attendance. There is, however, a sort of something of an echo of Condoleezza Rice in this, and I'm just wondering about now. Obviously, Hillary Clinton and this administration aren't these reckless utopian neocons. Don't seem to have a lot of traction, mercifully, with this government. But the notion that happened during the Bush era that we were spreading democracy in the Middle East, you know, the consequences are, I think, at least worth thinking about. What happens when Mubarak falls? And there's an experience that right next door to Tunisia or Algeria, of course, we experienced what happened there when the feast, the Islamists were poised to win their power. And the notion was that in some parts of the Arab world, particularly with Islamists, it's one vote, one time, and that's it. Now, that led to a bloody civil war. So Is Hillary Clinton repeating some of the kind of reckless utopianism of the Bush neocons in terms of realpolitik, in other words? I'm not placing any moral judgments
sure.
here.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think, you know, the State Department and Obama's statements have been fairly cautious. It's not like we called for, the U.S. government called for Ben Ali's ouster. All along, I think it was really about, you know, calling on the Tunisian government to respect the rights and will of the Tunisian people and demanding, you know, free and fair elections. But there was a point, actually, the day before that Hillary Clinton gave that speech that she said, we're not going to take sides. So I don't think the U.S. government has really been sort of radical on this, calling for a revolution across the Middle East. And I actually don't think, you know, a regime like Egypt, they might be worried tonight. They might be, you know, watching scenes in Tunis and nervously trying to put their finger on the pulse of their own population. But Egypt does have a pretty good sense of how to let the population blow off steam. They've been playing the authoritarian game pretty well for the last few decades and weathered a lot of different storms, including, you know, the famous assassination of Anwar Sadat. So they've been through a lot, and they really know how to hold on to power, for better or worse.
Well, on the other side of the coin, in terms of these popular movements, particularly with the frustrated young who are educated. And as you mentioned, Tunisia was unique in terms of its education and its burgeoning middle class. And of all the countries, that should have been the one where we were urging for more political freedom, because then it would have been more of a model. And now there's a power vacuum and a lot of uncertainty, and the army is basically holding it together, and the police are despised. Now, we know that a lot of young Egyptians have been demonstrating in front of the Tunisian embassy in Cairo, saying Mubarak will be next. So, given the viral nature of this revolt through the use of Facebook and other social networks, and the role that Al Jazeera has been playing, giving accurate information, showing the kind of pictures that have been routinely censored in the Arab world, don't you think that all these regimes are riding a tiger by the tail?
Well, you know, there's no question that they're just facing these incredible challenges, and they've done a miserable job of providing, you know, well-being and security to their people. I think I read recently that if you look at the last decade and you take all Arab countries, they've grown at a rate of half a percentage point over the last decade. And that includes, you know, this massive oil boom that we've witnessed. So they're really sort of staring stagnation in the face. But having said that, they're pretty adept at staying in power. They know how to you know, to crack down when they need to crack down, and how to let the population you know, have a little breathing space when that might help as well. Take a place like Egypt. You mentioned those demonstrations outside the Tunisian embassy. Well, it sounds like it might have been a lot of people, but you have to remember, Egypt is a country of 80 million people. You talk about Facebook and Twitter. Well, half of the Egyptian public is illiterate, and that's really the, you know, the main support base of the ruling party, the NDP. There, they have a massive patronage system, and they can use it to get the poor on their side, who ironically, you know, would probably be better off in a democratic system, but, you know, bread talks, money talks, and that's how these regimes have stayed in power for so long.
Well, just in closing, in the last minute then, Blake Hanschel, given that what happened with the feast in Algeria, and apparently the Algerian regime is nervous at the moment about what's happening next door, how does the U.S. craft a foreign policy, to take Hillary Clinton at her word, that does encourage democracy in places like Tunisia that is largely secular? as opposed to what happened in Iran, where you have a democracy but with a theocratic overlay. So, and Saudi Arabia is a sort of theocracy and certainly not a democracy, and they're obviously afraid too. So, why does it have to be this notion that if the Islamists take over, if one vote, one time, and it's all over?
Well, you know, I think we've seen even with these, you know, secular regimes, it's one vote, one time, and you sort of have to pick your poison. But I think, you know, point number one I would make is that the United States really has limited leverage. If you saw what happened in Tunisia, the U.S. really had nothing to do with it either way. So, you know, we often overestimate how much power the United States has. But also, I think the United States has been playing a reasonably smart long-term game, putting money into civil society and organizations that can help build those kinds of institutions outside of government and create the kind of democratic space that will be useful in a moment of transition. I think more money should be put into those efforts, and I think the United States should be more consistent in how it uses those resources. We spend a lot of money on militaries in the region, and the militaries are often the instruments of repression. So I think restoring the balance and putting more money into civilian institutions and being on the right side of history here will put the United States in good standing.
I thank you for joining us here today in Los Angeles, Blake Hounshell. Again, Blake Hounshell is a managing editor at Foreign Policy Magazine, and he's in Doha, Qatar. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And then we'll now take a brief station break and return, and we'll be talking about the prospect of skyrocketing housing foreclosures and the possibility of a rash of municipal defaults that could undermine the municipal bond market and cause the next financial crisis.